in order basically to stress in his own very troubled times how magnificent the Romans of old had been, how grand they were, how if only we now could recapture the world of men like Cato. So Cato was held up as a model, but even in his own times, he was a man of enormous influence. Now, like so many Romans, he lived through momentous times. He was born in 234. He died in 149 BC. He fought in the Second Punic War. He fought in the First Macedonian War. He held the quaestorship. He held the consulship. And he held a censorship. In other words, he held all the highest offices of the Roman state. He served many years in the Roman Senate. But Cato was sort of an interesting and cantankerous character in lots of ways. He affected a very rustic demeanor in terms of his clothing and how he spoke and everything. He wanted to avoid all pretense of sophistication. He thought one of the things, particularly as he grew a bit older, that offended him about Roman society was that people were taking on Greek customs and Greek manners and Greek ways of doing it. He didn't want any part of that. He wanted to be a good, sturdy, traditional Roman, stand for the old, manly Roman values. That was what was important to Cato. Now, Cato, among other things that he did, for example, he helped to pass a series of sumptuary laws. Now, sumptuary laws were passed at Rome to, for instance, in his case, to regulate the cosmetics or jewelry that women could wear when they appeared in public. He didn't want them sort of tarting themselves up too much. He also passed a law aimed to keep philosophers, well, actually, that meant Greeks, out of Rome. He disliked alien influences. He disliked foreigners. He didn't like people sort of messing about with his beloved Roman values. He wrote a book for his son, The Origines, The Origins. Interesting book, this. It's the first history of Rome written in Latin. Previous to this, the Romans had written in Greek. We'll have more to say about this later on. But Cato, in any case, wrote a history of Rome for his son, and he wrote it in Latin. And it's an interesting history. It survives only in small fragments today, unfortunately. It would be wonderful to have this book, but we don't. We have only really quotations of it embedded in the writings of some later authors. But it appears that rather than sort of telling his son blow by blow, fact by fact, the rise of the Roman people, what Cato did is tell his son stories about great Romans of old. Again, you see, the customs of our ancestors. What would our ancestors have done? How did they do things? This was how Cato taught his son Roman history. It was to put virtue on parade. That's clearly what the book was designed to do. He also wrote a book on agriculture, De Agricultura, on the care of fields. De Agricultura, a sort of a manual of agriculture. Over the long course of Roman history, several such manuals were written. This also was, in a way, written for Cato's son. Now, his ideal, Cato's ideal, was the citizen, farmer, soldier. Cato also taught his son a bit of law, the idea being that you needed to know a certain amount of Roman law in order to take your place in Roman society, in order to function in the Roman assemblies, in order to behave as a citizen. Taught him then a bit of Roman history and taught him farming. How do we do things now? Law. How have we always done things? History. What do we really do? We're farmers. There is Cato transmitting to his own son, and Cicero telling us about Cato transmitting to his own son the way the Roman system was meant to work. Meant to work. But as I think his attempt late in his life to ban Greeks shows pretty clearly, the current was already against Cato. The times were changing. He couldn't stop. He couldn't stop these Greek influences. From their conquest of the south, and from their introduction into the Hellenistic world, the conquest of the Greeks of Magna Graecia, and then, of course, one after another, their military campaigns in the eastern Mediterranean, the Romans came into contact with the culture of the Greeks in all imaginable ways. Rome's earliest writings, as I mentioned a moment ago, were actually in Greek. Greek was sort of the language in which you wrote if you expected to talk to anybody, if you expected to have an audience, if you expected to reach anyone. And also if you wanted to appear fashionable, cultivated. High-born Romans began regularly to hire Greek tutors to instruct in their familia, in their household. We talked, for example, last time about the well, actually two lectures ago, about the Greek historian Polybius, who had been captured during the Macedonian Wars and brought back to Rome. He lived in the household of the Scipios, one of the great families at Rome, you see. And he lived there, oh, he was accosted, he was a prisoner of war, yes. But in point of fact, he was really living in a very elegant state of affairs. And it was very common for Roman families, not all of them had prisoners of war, certainly not all of them had people as famous as Polybius living in their household, but prominent Roman families began to hire Greek tutors. And those Greek tutors, of course, would teach the children not only the Greek language, but Greek literature, Greek values. Much would creep in, you see, with the coming of these Greek tutors. That's what Cato didn't like. That's the people Cato wanted out, you see, if he could possibly get rid of them.